This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at George, or beg your pardon, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. We're switching it up because the man that is my company today is going to be working all Thursday and Friday. Also, Herd has had some Team Thad games and whatnot, so we're going to switch it up. Herd's going to be with us on Thursday, so my company today writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day. It's nice to be with you on a Monday because this is the Monday after Selection Sunday. How about those Tigers getting a number 5 seed? And how about college basketball as a whole? We got a bracket in our hands. Man, the one thing I really miss about the print newspapers is that you've got a printed edition.
I printed out, so I was the first person in the sports side of the building today. I printed out one for the office, one for the producer's booth, one for whoever would be sitting here in studio, and then obviously I printed out one for myself. I could not subscribe to this more. There's just nothing better than a fresh bracket.
Give him a raise. Yeah. Jeffrey Wright doing the Lord's work for the people there.
I like hard copy. In general, I prefer the paper version because I like to make notes and stuff. I like to write on it.
No doubt. You got notes galore in this bracket, man. There's 68 teams. Some of them don't deserve to be in. Some do deserve to be in and are not in. Some got seedings that were raw deals. Some were seeded way better than they should have been. But man, it's here. The madness is upon us, and I'm fired up to get into it.
There's nothing more that's ripe for overreaction than having a committee release a bracket and then immediately get right into it. So we will talk about that. Of course, as Cobb mentioned, shout out to the Tigers. They win the AAC championship game yesterday, so they are regular season and tournament champions. 29-5, 34 games of the year. You lose 5 of them. Unbelievable season. They are rewarded with a 5 seed. So we'll discuss that. Munz is going to join us. He was there in Fort Worth. We'll get his thoughts. I think your old coworkers and our friends, were they going at it on Twitter, Mark and Munz?
Oh no, were they? We got Giannotto and Munz beef.
Yeah, there was seeding. We'll get into it.
I saw this.
Yeah.
There was a little something there.
I don't really think there was beef, because I also think Munz's initial point was, and they said conference tournaments don't matter. I thought Munz's point was, sure seemed to matter to Memphis, which I thought was more than fair, because let's just start right there. You know what my first overreaction is? Everybody that's mad about North Carolina, you should have been mad at UAB, because to me, yesterday was the ultimate. I don't know where the Tigers are going to be more vulnerable than their third game in 3 days. They don't have their starting point guard. They don't even have their backup point guard. And they were really struggling to get organized and set. They looked out of sorts. But to me, because coming into it, it's like, man, that's the ripe spot. Like, UAB is going to end up winning that game because there's no – I thought it was kind of the reversal of when Memphis beat Houston 2 seasons ago to win the AAC title. I thought it was the reverse where, yeah, Memphis got them twice during the regular season, but they're banged up. That whatever happens on Sunday does not matter to them whatsoever. Hey, let's pack it up, lick our wounds, and I thought that would be a good spot for UAB. But, Cobb, I'll tell you this. The thing that shocked me in, like, the first 5 minutes was it was clear to me the team with more intensity was the Memphis Tigers. And I was like, whoo, boy, this is UAB blowing a chance.
Penny Hardaway has done a masterful job, in my opinion, of motivating his team over the last couple of months. And I realize you don't have to tell me this conference is bad in basketball. Oh, I get it. I get it. It's a one-bid league, Jeffrey. I think this is the first time, is it not, that the AAC has been a one-bid league? But the beef with UAB has been fun. The sort of the back and forth with Tulane and the Ron Hunter sort of element and you know the little quippy barbs between Ron and Penny, they've been fun. So Penny's found ways to motivate his team. And the thing that always shocks me that I think the general public doesn't realize this time of year is actually what a conference championship means to teams and to the players, right? Because we all care about the big dance. That's all we care about as a collective college basketball community. But when you've been grinding through a conference, you've been grinding through a season, and you have a chance to cut down the nets, it means a lot to you, even if it's against UAB and not an NCAA tournament team, yada yada. Like, that still means something to these teams, to these players, and clearly it did to Memphis. And you know, I'm a firm believer, man. I wasn't in that committee room. I don't know what the contingency plan was, other than we know that had Memphis won that game or had UAB won that game, North Carolina would not have gotten in. We know that. So we know they had contingencies in place. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if winning that game helped Memphis get to the 5 line. There's a world, I think, where Memphis loses that game. We see him as a 6 today. Whether or not that truly matters a whole lot, I don't know. But you'd rather be a better seed. Memphis has got a good seed. And I don't hate the matchup either. I think Colorado State, yeah, okay, they won the Mountain West tournament, but they weren't one of the best teams in the Mountain West over the course of the season. And, Jeffrey, I don't have to tell you, man.
Nope.
Mountain West.
I've already moved Memphis on.
Yeah, 100%. So
death taxes fade the Mountain West. Even more so this year because STDSU doesn't, like, I used to always say fade the Mountain West, but I would treat San Diego State as not a Mountain West team, and so I could move them on, but I would always set them aside. I left them outside of the system, if you will. But you're right on, and then also, I mean, their head coach wants another job. How distracted is Colorado State going to be?
No doubt. So that works in Memphis' favor, too. I also think the other game in the pod between, it's Maryland and Grand Canyon.
Yeah, Grand Canyon. That's actually, I don't know if people, I think, still get surprised by Grand Canyon. I'll tell you one thing about Grand Canyon. They always look good getting off the bus.
They do. They've got high major players on that team. They actually invest in basketball. Bryce Drew, as it turns out, isn't a bad coach. He just couldn't win at Vanderbilt when Vanderbilt had no investment in basketball. So he goes to Grand Canyon. And it's like, oh, wow. You give him a little NIL in a league like that. Oh, my gosh. You know, so Grand Canyon could be an upset. Potential Cinderella out of the West region there, which could make for a favorable second-round matchup if Memphis is able to get there. And to your point, Nico Medved is all but it's all but final that he's going to be the next Minnesota coach based on the reporting out there. So what are the vibes like in that CSU locker room right now? They all see this stuff. They know that their coach is probably about to leave. All of a sudden, their DMs and their text messages start lighting up with messages about where you're going to play next year, right, when you're trying to get ready for the NCAA tournament. And I don't think Memphis is dealing with that same type of stuff right now.
Yeah, I actually think Memphis is probably going to be a 5 no matter what, because when you look at it, in these terms, yes, the predictive metrics clearly stated this was a team that was not a 5 seed. But if you break it down in this way, they were a top 20 AP poll team, And there's usually always strong correlation between the top five seeds and the AP poll. They had the most overwhelming resume in terms of wins, where the wins occurred, of all the mid-major teams. And what we've been seeing the last few tournaments is the top mid-major usually ends up getting a five seed. And then I think the other thing that I was really paying attention to, and it didn't always work out, you know, one for one, but Memphis was able to overcome their predictive metrics by their WOB ranking. Wins over bubble, which is more of a strength of record. It's more of who you beat, where you beat, versus an average type team. I think that's what lifted them up, because in the end, Memphis was rewarded based on what they did on the floor. And I think at like the end of the day, isn't that kind of what we all want? Like,
thank goodness.
Like, right?
Yeah, best quad one winning percentage of any team in this field. That has to be rewarded. It must be honored. Otherwise, why are we playing the games? And you can argue, and I think in a bygone era, this is true. Memphis might be even better than a five seed based on what they did 10 years ago, 15 years ago, with the amount of victories they got against teams in this field in November and December, and the fact that they won the league outright, won the conference tournament. 15 years ago, I think Memphis is even better than a five seed right now. But hey, this is so much better, Jeffrey,
oh, yeah,
than what we've been talking about for the last 6 weeks, where it's, could they be an eight? Could they be a nine? Because if you went and looked at Bracket Matrix and 100-plus people out there who do bracketology, that was the consensus around Memphis going into championship week. This team's going to be an eight seed, right? I was in the camp all along that there would be a happy medium struck between what you accomplished and what the metrics said. And that ended up being the case. The committee respected their wins and their losses. Well, really their wins, because the losses still dragged it down quite a bit.
In the end, I don't even know if their bad losses really hurt, because I think Mark said that the committee set the 1 through 9 seeds. They had it set on Friday. As Cobb mentioned, they did have a contingency plan. I think that contingency plan involved the like 13s and 14s. And it would have obviously changed. Someone would have been moved to the play-in. Who did they say? Who did they say was the last bye? I think it was one team was going to move to Dayton, because I believe UAB, by winning the tournament, they would have been put on the bracket, not in Dayton. And I think they were going to get somewhere around a 13, and it was going to bump a team back to Dayton.
Because who were we watching?
Vandy. I think it was Vandy. I think they even mentioned it was Vanderbilt.
Right, because they were slotted for that first four game, and then they got... I mean, so Mark Byington and Hubert Davis, man, they ought to write a check to Penny's NIL fund. I mean, Hubert Davis gets a $100,000 bonus for making the NCAA tournament. Doesn't matter that it's the first four. They could go out and lose in Dayton on Tuesday. He cashes that $100,000 check, and he owes that check to Penny Hardaway, because if not for Memphis, UNC's the headline today is North Carolina declines NIT bid. That's the North Carolina headline. Instead, it's they get in the bracket with one quad one win, and West Virginia's governor is holding a press conference about the National Corrupt Athletic Association. So it's a totally different vibe right now around this bracket. If Memphis gets it done, not saying that, or that if UAB gets it done against Memphis, and not saying West Virginia wouldn't still be mad, they would be, but at least North Carolina would also be on the wrong side of the bubble, which a lot of people, I mean, you can easily argue they should be. So it's, you knew though, Jeffrey, you knew that they were going to find a way. You had to know. You had to know that committee wasn't going to find a way to get UNC in that bracket. They're top 40 in KenPom, top 40 in the net. That was all the justification they needed, despite that ugly record in quad one.
Yeah, you and I were talking about this a little bit off the air. I guess, because I found it difficult, and partly because, like, I love the tournament so much, and it's like, you give me the bracket, like, I'm just happy to see a bracket. There's paths of endless possibility of awesome, and I'm just happy to hear the music fired up, and, you know, you get the whole selection show. I found myself not really working up the lather of hate for North Carolina, but I think you're right. I think because baked into it was... I kind of thought, like, hey, leave it up to the judges. North Carolina's probably going to get the benefit of the doubt. And
they'll find a way. And Bubba Cunningham's the selection committee chair. He's the North Carolina athletic director, of course.
I love him. He had to recuse himself,
right? But how fitting was it that they didn't even, like, they knew exactly what they were going to get asked. So when the committee chair goes
on
ESPN after the bracket is revealed, it's usually just the committee chair.
Yep.
Well, he had the vice chair there with him for all of these interviews because he knew what the questions were going to be about. The questions were going to be about, why the heck did North Carolina make the bracket? Well, Bubba Cunningham isn't supposed to answer that. that because he's the North Carolina AD. It makes you think, man, shouldn't we get to a point where it's a group of completely unbiased evaluators on this thing? Because the fact that you have active athletic directors and active university administrators on this selection committee, I mean, it just makes the optics on a day like this horrific for a team like North Carolina, especially when you already think they're going to get the benefit of the doubt because of their brand, and now their AD is the selection committee chair, and they're the last team in the field. The optics around that are not great.
Well, I was wondering this. Should, and maybe he did, we don't know, should Bubba Cunningham have to disclose, just so y'all know, if North Carolina gets in, I do get a bonus? Or is it a room of administrators that probably already know, hey, if they get, like, it's something that they probably are, you know, they probably already know he's probably getting a bonus. Like, I do think that's kind of a conflict of interest. And I kind of go back and forth. Would you rather have the committee like we have in the playoff committee, which is there are occasional administrators, but it's also people from outside the sport? Would you rather have that? Or because, like, on a certain level, like, this is the biggest property that the NCAA, the organization itself, owns. Like, so it is their property. So obviously, I think they're probably going to make sure their member institutions are represented. I almost just feel like it's kind of the best of what we've got. And I think I still, at the end of the day, I think I still prefer it to people that are just trying to, like, rack up some Hilton points.
What's Condoleezza Rice doing? She needs to be on another sports committee, doesn't she?
Let's see. I think we're about to get into Condi season because isn't she? She's also a member at Augusta. So we'll see her pop up at Augusta. Like, we're getting close. But yeah, I feel like it's been a good solid 5 years since Condi's been on a committee.
Yeah, no doubt. Well,
who else can we dust off?
Oliver Luck. Oliver Luck, the father of Andrew Luck. He's on all these committees.
He popped up with the XFL. I think somebody hired him as another consultant again. I think he got back in the consulting game last fall. But you're right.
High school basketball or something.
I feel like you're right. I feel like every 9 months you used to read about Oliver Luck getting a new seven figure job.
Yeah. Nonetheless, the gripes with the committee are mainly to me about seeding, because the bubble stuff was going to be tough. There was just so little separating these teams on the bubble. Clearly, you can argue that North Carolina shouldn't have been in. You could argue that Texas shouldn't have been in based on their horrific non-conference strength of schedule. Okay, like those are fair debates. Kind of my qualms are more with some of the seedings. The fact that Michigan ends up as a 5 after winning the Big Ten tournament. Wisconsin stays as a 3. We know that the Sunday results never matter in championship week. So honestly, Jeffrey, at the end of the day, the committee should be glad that Tennessee did not beat Florida, because you know what? Had Tennessee beaten Florida and Florida still ended up as the final number one seed over Tennessee, those committee chairs would be getting their emails lit up right now by Tennessee fans who would just be crushing them for that. So the crisis averted there, because Florida winning took matters out of the committee's hands on that one and kept them from potentially being just targeted endlessly from Tennessee fans, who I think rightfully would have had, you know, a case to be upset had an SEC tournament title not gotten them a number one seed.
Yeah, but I guess, let's take Michigan for example. If you had not seen the Big Ten tournament, are you really that upset that Michigan gets a 5? They kind of limped home down the stretch. Like, I know I'm kind of been on this block, but I really felt like for the most part, the tournament got seeded as if conference tournaments didn't really matter.
And that's the sad thing, is these conference tournaments seem to matter less and less, but they still matter to the players.
Well,
they still matter.
I'll
to
tell
the
you
coaches.
Where else they matter. They matter on availability.
Yeah, you get banged up in a conference tournament, and so you
Cooper
see,
Flag is out.
You see Tyrese Hunter, man.
Tyrese Hunter's, I mean, probably done. Grant Nelson, I don't know what the status of him, but he got hurt.
Is he a specialist?
Iowa State.
Iowa State's one of their best players is going to be unavailable now. So it's a
another Houston kid got hurt.
Yeah, Waters Roberts, right?
Yeah.
What's his availability? Massive storyline in the Midwest. part of the reason why I actually, in my preliminary bracket, have Tennessee going to the Final Four, which I know is crazy. I'm never that guy to bet on Tennessee this time of year. Look at Rick Barnes' track record in March, you know. Program's never been to the Final Four. But if Houston's a little banged up coming to this thing, they got to fend with Gonzaga potentially in the second round. I mean, there are certain matchups and draws in this bracket that are horrifically unfavorable. And, I mean, I go to the very top of the bracket, number one overall seed Auburn. I mean, what do you think Bruce Pearl was thinking when Pat Kelsey and Louisville show up in the 8-9 matchup? Potentially a second-round game against that team? I mean, no thank you. I mean, I thought Louisville should have been seeded better than they were. They end up as an 8. And so some of these 8-9s are real, like, potential Cinderella threats. I mean, you look around the bracket, mentioned Gonzaga already, but Louisville has got a shot. And then UConn? I mean, are you serious? UConn is going to be potentially playing Florida in the second round as the two-time reigning national champion. I'm not thrilled about that either if I'm Todd Golden and the Gators, especially not coming off of a long, brutal SEC tournament.
So there's a lot there. Number one, I think we can all collectively agree, the West region just rules. I mean, Bill Self versus Cal, winner gets Patino. Like, that's as good and spicy for old school sports writers. Like, that narrative just writes itself.
CBS Sports gonna love those matchups.
So the defending national champions on the 8-9 line. Obviously for us, that's where Memphis shows up. You've got the Crab 5, which is the first nickname I've heard in like a decade that I'm like, I'm scared of. Like, I hear when I hear the Crab 5, like, and they're getting announced, like, oh boy, I don't want to bet against them. Mizzou Drake is like the ultimate Styles makes fights. Like, one team would love to play without a shot clock. I guess technically both teams would like to play without a shot clock, but just one would never have it go below like 10, and the other would literally take a minute possessions. Texas Tech could be maybe the most dangerous 3 seed. Like, that region itself just absolutely rocks.
Stacked.
But I was also wondering this. So obviously everyone's doing the math of, all right, Louisville's playing in Lexington. Kentucky is playing in Milwaukee. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Are we sure Lexington's just going to allow a Louisville takeover? And further, for maybe like the Cats fans that aren't traveling, like, wouldn't it make all the sense in the world? They're just going to show up and root for the SEC?
Yeah, snatch up all those tickets to get the Louisville fans from good. I mean, those Kentucky fans, they're sick. There were as many Kentucky fans at the SEC Tournament Championship game yesterday as there were Florida fans. It's mind-blowing, and Kentucky had been eliminated for 2 days already. Wouldn't put it past you at all to see that. And then, boy, how about the Tigers? I mean, who does not dream, growing up as a kid, Jeffrey, of playing inside Climate Pledge Arena?
Oh, I mean, listen, I think my first ever NBA game was in the artist formerly known as Key Arena. My dad was repping Oberto Beef Jerky, which was based out of Seattle. And so I actually would go to Seattle a lot. My mom's also a military brat. She went to high school in Tacoma. So we went to Seattle a decent amount. That was a sweet time because Oberto had a box in Key Arena. So I got to see Gary Payton, like that old Sonics team. And then they had like seats right behind home plate at the King Dome. And we got to see Randy Johnson strike out 19, which was an electric factory, and see Griffey hit a bomb all in the same weekend. Like, that's the stuff that makes you a sports fan.
Well, what I'm hearing from that is you got a lot of free beef jerky as a kid.
Still get a lot of free beef jerky.
A good life you live.
Yeah. Well, not for the old waistline. But yeah, I mean, that is the one talking point locally that people are bummed about, which is, you get the 5 seed, but you got to go to Seattle.
Climate Pledge Arena. I mean, come on. What are we doing? Climate Pledge Arena?
I think it was
Climate Pledge.
I'm pretty sure it was Amazon bought the rights and they were going to preach to us. Because I think it's technically Amazon that bought it.
I mean, that intro is just going to hit a little different. And now we're coming to you live. NCAA tournament action at Climate Pledge Arena.
Right? Okay. You just got to go CPA, right? You got to make that an acronym.
Regardless, they're in the field. They're seeded better than we thought they'd be. They've won the AAC regular season. Heck, they won the non-conference in my book. There's not a trophy or a banner for that. And now you add an AAC tournament title to the mix too. So, you know, it begs the question, right? Doesn't it? Because going into this season, it was like, Well, you know, Penny's got to not just make the NCAA tournament. Maybe that was what some people said, but he's got to win there now, right? Because they've never made it past the first weekend under his direction. But now, let's say, given all that they accomplished this regular season, what's that bar right now? Is it, hey, you know what? If we lose a close one to Colorado State, bummer, but we had a great year. Is that the vibe? Is that the vibe? Or is it like, no. We got to make the Sweet 16.
This is where you still have, like, good vibes from the year. Because I think back to when they knocked off Houston and they were on the 8-9 line against FAU, matched up with Purdue. There was the air of this week of, it's been such a good season, man. Just about anything. Now, I think what most people thought was, hey, beat FAU. You know, it's a CUSA team. You've got a better roster. Beat FAU. Be competitive with Purdue. And that's still a good season. Obviously, like, that entire outlook completely changed the moment FDU knocked off Purdue. And then all of a sudden, you start to think, oh my God. Because that was also, they would have been matched up with Tennessee in a Sweet 16, and that Tennessee team had, I believe, two of the top five starters done for the year with injuries.
Yeah, they were just in rock fight mode at that point.
Right, they were that, and you started looking at it, and the path to go, I mean, FAU ends up doing it. They end up making it to the Final Four, and so that FAU loss, and then being in dramatic fashion where you had the timeout not called, and the getting beat on a buzzer beater, like, that made everyone kind of angry. I think, though, what makes this a little bit different is I think you kind of have the built-in excuse right now with Tyrese Hunter. And
what a downer, man. What an absolute downer.
I mean, that's just, like, that is the part of sports that just sucks. I mean, you have a guy that has your most NCAA tournament experience, non-contact injury on a game on Saturday that I think probably ended up not mattering. But, I mean, it just sucks. And I think the thing, though, is with Haggerty and with Dane playing the way that they are, you feel pretty good about going into any game. The only concern that I have is I felt like early in yesterday's game, they really struggled to get organized. And I felt that was where you felt the loss of Tyrese Hunter.
Well, I'll say this about Tyrese Hunter. It was really impressive to me the way in the huddles during the timeouts, he was still so active, still such a part of it. You know, he knows whether or not he's going to be able to play.
I think his reaction said it all. I'll be stunned if he plays.
He goes through this freak injury. It's a non-contact injury. It's the fluke of all flukes, just sort of a one in a million sort of thing. But for him to be so engaged in that game, I just thought it spoke wonders about sort of the leader he's been for them. And you don't lose that necessarily. He might not be on the floor, but like he's still going to provide that emotional lift to a certain extent. And you know, thankfully, you mentioned Dane Dage's emergence, man. I mean, he's been so good, and just continues to stuff Yaxel Lindeborg into a locker. I mean, continues to do that. And that guy, that Yaxel, is one of those guys that I don't know how he stayed at UAB or where Andy got the money to keep him, because I know Memphis fans might not believe it because he hasn't been very good against Memphis this season, but he's a really good player. I mean, he's the type of guy that most high major coaches would pay over $1 million to have on their roster, and that Memphis found a way to neutralize or mitigate his impact three times in the same season. Super, super impressive, and you got to hand it to Dane Danger. But, you know, I mean, this time of year, you pare down your rotation anyway. If P.J. Carter can hit some shots, and Colby Rogers hit some shots yesterday too. That was huge, right? Because yes, you don't have Tyrese Hunter.
Especially with UAB not hitting shots. Like, that was where Colby really, I felt like, put him over the edge. Because, like, once they got it out to, like, because kind of what we saw in the Wichita State game and the Tulane game was they could kind of get it to seven, and you felt like, okay, this is them taking control, but they never really got it out to double figures. Last night with UAB, or yesterday afternoon with UAB not hitting shots, it felt like when Colby knocked down a couple threes, like, okay, those are the daggers that gave them the distance they needed.
To differentiate yourself from the team that lost FAU you got to have another option aside from PJ and Dane, because that team, it was Kendrick Davis, it was DeAndre Williams, and you didn't have anything else. This team has had a multitude of options beyond the first two. You now potentially have lost one of those options in Tyrese Hunter. Man, if Colby Rogers can make shots like he did yesterday, it gives them a real chance to not win just one, but potentially two games. Now, don't get me wrong. Maryland is a four seed, isn't just like a sleeper.
No.
Like they're serious, man. They're a really good team. Derek Queen, they got a big time front line.
By the way, how's Seton Hall been looking the last 2 years?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see all these reports now yesterday, like Maryland's looking to give Kevin Willard a 10-year contract extension, you know? So clearly he's done an amazing job there. They got a stud guard, Jacoby Gillespie, who transferred from Belmont. So, I mean, that would be one of the best potential second round games in this entire bracket if Memphis and Maryland were to meet. But hey, like I said, don't sleep on the Antelopes at Grand Canyon, because they've got a squad there themselves.
I want to talk about Tennessee with you, because I don't know. I feel like, and this is always a dangerous spot to be, because I think I got there this fall as well, where I know it's not like the ultimate eye test team, but I almost feel like Tennessee's kind of getting overanalyzed. And I mean, they get into foul trouble yesterday, but like, man, I thought when Florida went up like 8 or 9, I was like, all right, that's all she wrote. Cause that felt like the script that Florida had.
Agreed.
During the tournament.
Agreed. I thought Florida was going to win that game by 25. I was there right across from the Tennessee bench yesterday, seeing this thing in person, started working up my Florida SEC championship story. And then, oh gosh, here comes Jordan Ganey. Oh, wow. Where did that come from? And that's what's different about this year's Tennessee team from last year's team that made the Elite Eight. And I can't say, Jeffrey, that this year's Tennessee team is better than last year's team, but it's different in this respect. It's not a whole bunch of guys sitting around watching Dalton Connect take the game into his own hands. And that's what it devolved into last year, because Vescovi, Josiah Jordan-James, they became so deferential to Dalton Connect that it was all or nothing. This year, you've got a Jordan Ganey who can come on strong when Chaz Lanier is struggling. Zakai Ziegler can score 0 points in the first half and come out and pour 20 on you in the second. And yeah, they're a little lean on depth, without a doubt. Foul trouble killed him yesterday. But they at least have more than one offensive option, which in theory should alleviate this whole deal that they sometimes do where they go, you know, 5-6 minutes without a bucket.
I think the biggest thing, though, is you mentioned Zakai, and for me, it's like, even if he's not scoring, I just feel like he's playing really well right now. It's like he's getting them into offense, and then Tennessee can get stops. Like, to me, that was the other part that we saw throughout the tournament. It's like, when they needed the Texas game, when they really needed to turn it on defensively, because it felt like that was kind of one of those games that it was 6 points here, 6 points there, and it was just kind of like hovering in that, and then you got down to like the last 10 minutes and Tennessee just turned the water off and they are still able to score. Like, I think people keep thinking that this is a Tennessee team that scores in the 50s, and while maybe they're not putting up the offensive numbers that, you know, BYUK is, like, I still think they're good on offense.
If I'm ranking the SEC teams in order of Final Four capability, national championship capability, right now Florida is number one on that list. Auburn, to me, is number two on the list. Yes, they've lost 3 of 4, but at the end of the day, those losses were all against really, really good teams. So I've got Auburn 2. Then I would have Alabama 3. Sketchy defense, don't get me wrong. And then right there next to them, Tennessee 4. And that's not a slight to the Vols in the least. We know how good the SEC was this year. I think Tennessee is good enough to make the Final Four. They've never done it before. The fact that they're good enough to do that is tremendous praise for Rick Barnes. And then after that, I don't feel great, to be honest, about the league's chances. And it's going to be fascinating, because I sat down with Garth Glissman, the associate commissioner for the SEC, this week and talked to him for quite a while. What constitutes success, right? You get 14 teams into this bracket, you know the rest of the country's waiting to pounce. You know people got those drafts queued up for when the SEC only has 3 or 4 teams survive the first weekend, right? About, well, best conference in college basketball history. What are you doing in March, though, right? And so I think the upper crust of the league is in good shape. The four that we saw in the semifinals of the SEC tournament all have a chance to make the Final Four. Wouldn't be stunned if any of them cut down the nets at the end of it. But where I think the SEC is going to be real interesting is the teams immediately after those top four, because Kentucky's got bad health. Texas A&M is streaky as all get out. And then, look, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Missouri, You know, it was up and down, to say the least, in the second half of the season, so I'm not sure I trust those guys.
No, and then, I mean, you're also going to have some situations where it's like, okay, well, Vandy could win, Bama could win. Well, one of the SEC teams is going to get knocked out before the Sweet 16. True. Like, I feel like there's a few of those, but I think that's kind of the other big point. And I haven't filled out the whole bracket yet, but I do wonder if this winds up being a super chalky year. Because it does feel like when you think about the conference tournaments from what we watched, and who knows what motivation mattered for certain teams, but it felt like we didn't have a ton of surprises. Like the teams that we think are good show that they're good, and I'm wondering if that's going to hold true. I believe the stat is in the KenPom era, there have been four teams that had 35 a net efficiency rating of 35 or higher. And I believe all four of those teams were Final Four teams. And this year, all four number one seeds had efficiency ratings of 35. So it is possible, like, the top of the sport. And it would kind of make sense when you think about it. It's like, all right, if we're in the NIL era, if we're in the freedom of movement era, all the good players are going to wind up at the teams that care the most, and they end up being stacked. And so it feels like we could have a wild, like, mid-card. But I just wonder if we're going to wind up looking up and seeing either, you know, All four of the Final Four teams being one or two seeds.
Well, if there's one that's ripe for chaos, it's the West. It's yep. Memphis's region, because you got UConn there as the eight, potentially against Florida in the second round. St. John's, nothing else to say about them. It's incredible what Rick Pitino has done. And then Texas Tech, ultimate sleeper right there with Maryland. The three and the four in the West, so good. And look at Memphis, right? We all know their resume at this point. They can beat a lot of really good teams.
All right, Munz has had an emergency, so we're going to take a break, and we will not have Munz yet, but we will talk some more Tigers later on during the show. But we also had TA night on Saturday night. We had, whoo boy, man, whoever was at had to do the WMC version of the broadcast, the simulcast. I felt bad for whoever was having to hit that dump button, but we did have a great night. TA saw his jersey go to the rafters. We'll talk about that and the Grizzlies weekend when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Survivor 48 is here, and after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Huge discounts await with our friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. This Saturday, March 22nd, Robert Irwin Jewelers in South Haven, right there off Goodman Road, is hosting a six-hour 60% off sale. From diamond rings to designer jewelry, everything is 60% off. They have thousands of items to choose from. This is the real deal. It's a real 60% off sale. No marking up to mark down. And from 6 hours starting at 10 a.m., you can get 60% off anything in the showcase, whether it be diamond anniversary bands, diamond rings, diamond pendants. They're all 60% off. That means 60% off designer jewelry, 60% off engagement rings, 60% off bracelets, earrings, necklaces, gemstones. Even name brand watches are 60% off. There's over 1,000 items to choose from. Also, they have special financing available. You can enjoy up to 12 months interest-free at Robert Irwin Jewelers, or you can pay over 60 months at a low APR. It's in-store only, so visit the Robert Irwin Jewelers Showcase in the South Lake Center in South Haven, Mississippi. It starts at 10 a.m. and it'll end at 4 p.m. on Saturday. For complete details, visit rijewelers.com, or you can follow them on all socials at rijewelers. Split weekend, Cobb, for the Grizzlies. And, you know, it kind of fit the narrative of the season. The Grizzlies played a good team on Friday. Didn't really wasn't all that competitive. Played a bad team. Absolutely smoked them on Saturday as they fall to the Cavs on Friday and smoke the heat on Saturday, but also we had the post-game festivities of the Tony Allen number retirement ceremony. And, you know, you and I have talked about this, and across the country, I know there's probably people that sit there and go, like, what's so special about this team? They made a Western Conference Finals. They didn't win a game. Like, it just had to live through it, because every single one of these ceremonies, it just hits you right in the feels. And maybe if it's like the era of nostalgia that we're in, I just eat up every single one of these, and Saturday nights was no exception.
Man, I watched a lot of the ceremony today, catching up on it, and it made me emotional watching it 2 days after the fact on YouTube, man. And I thought Lionel Hollins summed it up. He said it turned a separated city into more of a unified city. And if that doesn't explain why Tony Allen and the core four matter, I don't know what does. I mean, obviously, basketball can't fix poverty. It can't fix racism. It can't fix police brutality. It's not going to raise your property values. But, man, if it's not a vehicle for civic pride, and, you know, it gives Germantown and Frazier something to come together around. And that's what the core four did for Memphis. And so to see that moment, to see Tony Allen get to be honored in that way, as a guy who rarely, if ever, averaged double figures during his NBA career, I thought it was so great, man. And shoot, one of those guys said, it might have been Zebo. He was so correct. He said, I don't think there will ever be another player like Tony Allen. He's just so unique. So it was awesome to see him get that recognition.
Well, it also makes you realize, like, how many defensive-minded guys are there even in the league? Because now it feels like, okay, if you can't even hit a baseline of shooting, you're just dismissed as a player in the league. Like, I don't even feel like we have, like, is the closest thing to a defensive specialist like Alex Caruso?
Well, it's 3-and-D. And the thing about it is Tony Allen never had the 3.
Yeah.
He was just the D. And so it was like the whole joke during that ceremony was like, yeah, we just told him to go stand in the corner.
Right? I loved that. Like, stand in the corner, stay out of the way.
It was kind of true, though. But I love the fact that Pete Pranica brought this up, and it blew Zebo's mind. It seemed to blow Mark's mind. The fact that Tony Allen is the franchise record holder for most made field goals in a game without a miss.
I think it was 12 straight without a miss.
Insane. That was, I was, like I said, man, just getting emotional kind of watching it. I thought it was cool. Did you notice when TA made an effort to shout out Rudy Gay?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned this, because, you know, even Mike has mentioned it. It's like the original, like, core four was going to be Mike, Mark, Zebo, and Rudy. And obviously, Rudy's career goes a certain way, and they move on from him. I do find myself, like, whether or not it's, you know, public or whatnot, like, the fact that Rudy seems to be at peace and can, like, actually be happy for these guys, like, it makes me think better of Rudy Gay. Not that I have, like, a 100%. Low opinion of Rudy Gay, but, like, I don't know. I feel like he's handled himself, like, gracefully.
Because there's so many characters who contributed to that era who aren't on that Mount Rushmore, who aren't in the core four. You know, we glorify the core four, and rightfully so, and they're the ones who will have their numbers retired, but there were so many other key parts of that run who I thought Tony did such a cool job of recognizing during that ceremony. That's what was so special about it, is that, like, yeah, the night was about Tony Allen, but he made it about everybody else, too. Which was cool.
Well, no, I think you're right, because what I enjoyed about it as well is, yes, when Tony got on the mic, like, prayers for whoever was in charge of the dump button, because it got raw, it got real. But the fact that he basically went through every single person on the stage and explained what that person meant to his career and to his life, like, it was kind of a, like, embodied in it, it's kind of like an American myth. In the sense of, like, rags to riches, and, like, think about all the things that could have stopped Tony Allen from ever becoming someone we ever knew his name, and just from becoming a statistic, and all of the people along the way, and him shouting out, even gave Eddie Sutton a shout out. Obviously, Glenn Ciprian's a big part of the documentary, but we shout him out. And then, you know, he goes through the line from Quincy Pondexter to Lionel to Rudy to Paul Pierce, to D. Rose, everyone in between. Like, I just enjoyed how it was his opportunity, and then obviously his family. Like, he got the opportunity to thank every single person that kind of helped him along the way, and it seemed to matter to those people, and I thought that was what made it really special.
I love the story from Paul Pierce about, hey, Rook, I'll give you $1,000 for every dunk in this summer league game. And then as Paul tells it, Tony Allen goes out and dunks 9 times in that game, and Paul Pierce owes him 9K. And then they go on those runs in Boston, and you know it's crazy, right? You look, he spent almost as much time in Boston as he did in Memphis over the course of his career, and it's unusual, I guess, for players to find their home on that second contract, right? And sure. That was the same for Z-Bo. I mean, Z-Bo bounced around. Memphis was not his first stop by a long shot, and so. You get these guys like Tony Allen and Zach Randolph in particular, those two, who the rest of the league was kind of through with. You know, as Paul and Tony were telling it, Danny Ainge wasn't going to pay Tony what he deserved in Boston. Memphis says, well, we got a spot for you. We'll pay you. In that sense, I mean, is Tony Allen not like the most significant acquisition?
I guess you have to make the argument, Mark, in the trade. So the Powell trade, yeah, but they get Mark, but I mean, in terms of, I think you're spot on this. I think you can make the argument Tony Allen is the most significant free agent acquisition that we've ever seen for the Grizzlies.
And I didn't even realize this until reflecting on it with, it was Mark who was talking about it, saying when Tony got here, he was picking up DNPs.
Yeah.
There was a time in his first season.
And one of Harrington,
where he was hardly playing.
And I believe in Harrington's story. In the game that starts the all heart, grit, and grind, the Oklahoma City where they had 8 guys or whatever, and he cuts the promo after the game. At that game, which was in January, he had more DNPs than starts, 4-3.
And yet, lo and behold, that same year, he goes on to embody everything that era was all about. That you know, for me personally, that was such as my senior year in high school when they beat the Spurs in the game 6, right? And at that time, I'm in the camp of, oh man, I can't wait to leave Memphis. I'm so ready to get out of here, all this sort of stuff, right? But the Grizzlies and what TA and the core four did was gave me something to be proud of, so that when I got to college and people try to dunk on you for being from Memphis and they got all their snide remarks and stuff, you know, I'm clapping back with the Grizzlies and they give me something to be proud of, right? And so that's I'll forever appreciate Tony Allen and those guys for that, because like they made me proud to be from Memphis.
No, I think that's, in the end, it's like, what is their lasting legacy? It's the first time in my lifetime, and I think I'm 4 years older than you, it was actually cool to be from Memphis. And are they entirely responsible for it? No, but like they are a big part of it, because they penetrated even the NBA zeitgeist and the talking heads. And so like it made it cool to be from Memphis, and you're 100% right. Like that's the first time where it's like you could kind of poke your chest out.
Yeah, yeah. So it hits you in the feels. I can't wait for Mike's now. That one's going to be – that one might be the most emotional of them all, because when his goes up, that'll be the last one. You know, that'll kind of be a sad moment in and of itself to see the last member of the core four get that honor.
Yeah, I think you're right, because Mike had planned on being there, and it sounded like we had storms. I don't know how bad the weather was in Nashville, but I mean it was brutal. We still I think have places where the power's out, so I think the storms impacted him, because he was obviously going to do the same thing that he did for Mark's, which was they had an off night. He was going to fly in, fly out, but it seemed like the storms basically made that impossible. I think Kevin Garnett was also going to be a part of it, and the weather impacted him being there. But I don't know. I thought it was cool having Paul Pierce there. And like, I know he was in TA's documentary. And the other thing that just kind of stands out, Cobb, is there a cooler person on the planet than Derrick Rose? Like, I know his career's gone like a certain way. It's just like the way he like sits, like everything's like, damn, that guy's cool. Like, I just think of like, just in the Cartman voice, like that kid is cool.
Yeah, he got about as loud of a cheer as anybody when they went to him. I thought it was funny him telling that story about like Tony Allen used to sun me, you know, when I was growing up. Me and my buddies idolized him, and he didn't give me the time of day until I was in my 8th year in the league. Fantastic stuff. But it's cool to see the chronology, right? We see it in Memphis with the players who have come out of this city, but to hear the Chicago guys explain it, like D. Rose saying that Tony Allen was the guy who he idolized and looked up to coming up, and the type of person who he looked at to say, well, if he can make it, I can make it, that sort of thing. And then Tony Allen shouts out Juwan Howard, who was that same example to him. And so it's like when you're able to see somebody who you can relate to achieve something that you want to achieve, all of a sudden it opens that door for you to go out and do the same thing yourself. And so, man, that's cool to kind of see that legacy on that stage. And, man, I thought Pete, Brevin, and Rob did an awesome job with that because they're used to talking with microphones on their hands, but they're not used to being MCs for public events like that.
It's a very different mindset, too, because, like, you have to guide it along the way, but you also have to recognize, like, I'm not the person that people want to hear from. And, like, that can be it can be hard as a host, like, to kind of guide it like that. And I'm with you. I thought they all three did great jobs.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun thing to watch. I'm glad I was on here with you today and then took the time to watch that because
it was well worth it. This time of year is
so busy, right? And you get so caught up in the content and the bracket and all this stuff you got to do. But stuff like that it makes you realize, like, why do we love this? Like, why do we love basketball? Why does basketball mean so much to us? And for me, it's like it's a life-changing thing. I mean, basketball has played such a huge part of my life, and you know, it's my job now, but at the same time, it's a passion. And you just see how much it means, how it can change people's lives, like it did for Tony Allen, and that was special.
No, you're 100% right, because also the other aspect of it is you know, because I'd mentioned this on the show last week, it does always take you back. Like, I think we always know, like, when the tournament starts, like, the tournament can just take over everything. But it even felt like last week, conference championships week was really starting to, like, be an extra week of the NCAA tournament. And so it makes it, to me, so much more difficult to, like, follow along with everything happening in the NBA. Like, I can obviously still watch the Grizzlies and kind of keep tabs on them, but it's like, I didn't know I was going to wake up this morning and realize that Houston is in a three-way tie for second in the West. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like you kind of forget.
Well, the West is bonkers right now.
I mean, the West is just topsy-turvy all the way through. All right,
Jeffrey, I don't even know who won the Players' Championship. I didn't see a single shot. Who won it?
Oh, it's have I not told you? Remember, it's always been a major. Rory won.
Did he? Okay.
They had to go back and watch. No, they had to go back. They had a playoff today. So they had. The reason why you didn't know who won is they had a 4-hour rain delay yesterday, and Rory kind of, you hate to say, stubbed his toe because he was like the only guy in the final like five groups that really took it deep. And he went, started off birdie eagle and got within one. JJ Spahn, everyone else like started going back, but Rory didn't birdie 16, and that allowed JJ Spahn to get back tied for the lead. And then they went to a 3-hole playoff. This morning, Rory birdie 16, Spahn did not. Rory hits it to like 20 feet on 17, and Spahn hit it into the water, and it was over.
Well, you knew JJ Spahn would never have a chance against Rory in a playoff. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way that it went. All right, when we come back, we will get into the Grizzlies because the Grizzlies are back in action tonight. Another late night as the Grizzlies have a 5-game West Coast road trip, but also want to get back into college basketball, talk a little bit more about the Tigers, and more that we're seeing from the world of sports. We'll do all that on the list. And during hour number two, stick around. You'll listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.